episode 18 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Scheffler. This week, I speak with Ashley McBride, an instructional technology facilitator out of North Carolina. Ashley and I met randomly at ISTE during a session for EdTech coaches, and we quickly bonded over the fact that we are both podcast runners. She is the host of the A+ EdTech podcast, a great variety show covering instructional technology topics. This episode was also another one of the live episodes that I did with VoiceEd Radio Network. It was recorded a couple months ago, and the recording process was done on air with mistakes and all. In fact, our first attempt at trying to do a live recording between Ashley and I only got on the air for about 15 minutes of the full hour and a half, so you may hear us reference that in the episode. It is also another episode where I was a guest on her show as well, so you can check me out on the A+ EdTech podcast on October 9th. Ashley and I talk about representation of teachers, the contradictions of acceleration programs like AP and dual enrollment, the need for personalization in education, and the disconnect between what we think teaching is and what it actually is. We really go through a lot of topics, but the conversation we do on each one is pretty deep, and I think it's really excellent. Before we get into the interview, I do have one quick announcement. I'm trying to catch Flipgrid fever, and in order to encourage me, I decided to create a Flipgrid for the podcast. If you have questions, thoughts, comments, or suggestions to share, check out the feedback page at bradscheffler.com/feedback, and there's a link to the Flipgrid where you can submit your feedback. So, sit back and enjoy episode 18 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Ashley McBride. All right, welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. This one we're recording live. I'm your host, as always, Brad Scheffler. And I'm joined today by Ashley McBride. Say hi, Ashley.
Hi.
Hey. All right. So Ashley is a friend of mine that I met out at ISTE, and I thought she'd be a great guest to have on this show after numerous attempts. And hopefully this is the one that actually makes it to the podcast. So... Ashley, could you tell us a little bit about you for the podcast listeners?
Yes. My name is Ashley McBride, and I am an instructional technology facilitator. So basically, I'm just an instructional coach that focuses on technology in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, at a high school called East Chapel Hill High School. And I get to work with teachers one-on-one and small groups and just get to do a lot of really cool coaching activities and get to know my teachers really well. I'm also a podcaster. I am the host of the A+ EdTech podcast, and I am a mom and a t-ball coach and about 500 other hats around here somewhere. That's pretty much it.
Cool. You know, this is the third time I've heard you introduce yourself, and that's the first time I've heard you use T-ball coach. How is that?
It's fun. It's interesting because you've got various, you would think that if they're only like 2 years apart, so we have 4, 5, and 6 year olds, you would think that they'd be all about the same level. Oh no, the 4 year olds are just so much fun. Like we were batting today and they kept trying to go to third base instead of first. And, but then the 6 year olds hit the ball and you're kind of like, oh no, don't hit the little ones. So
my son just did one season of T-ball. He finished up in like May, and, it was hilarious to watch. I mean, it was amazing. I laughed so hard watching those games, and just, it was so much fun. You know, I've got a comment in the back channel here. T-ball, just run after the ball.
Yeah, pretty much.
All the kids mob on the ball. I like it.
Oh yeah. We had a blast. We did it last season with my oldest, and then he moved up to coach pitch. And then we have two younger, kids who were both the right age for T-ball. So we decided, why not? And then because we were donating two children to the team, we figured we should probably coach it as well. So he who has the most players must coach.
I didn't realize that was the rule in Chapel Hill. I wasn't aware that is the written law.
Yeah. Well, we figured we better be nice. If we're donating two young ones, then...
That seems fair. That seems fair. Very cool. Well, you know, Ashley, I do really appreciate you being on the show tonight, and I look forward to getting through some of my questions with you here. I'm excited. So I'm going to dive right in with my first one. And my first question of all my guests is, what is the biggest problem facing education right now?
The problem facing education right now that I see is that we have a lot of leaders who have never been educators, or who have been educators for a very short amount of time. So for instance, a lot of politicians are making laws that directly affect education, and they have never been a teacher, and they don't know what it is to be in a classroom with 30 kids and have to follow every single law to the letter. And in fact, in the state of North Carolina, we have a superintendent right now, superintendent of schools for our state department, who was voted in, and he served 1 year. I think he did 1 year as a substitute, but I know he did 2 years in Teach for America. And so he did have a little classroom experience. But when you think about the fact that I cannot be an instructional coach unless I've been in the classroom for 5 years, and my principals cannot be principals unless they've been in the classroom for 5 years. So how is that a thing, but it's not a thing for the state level or even district levels in some cases? It just, I think that is a huge problem, because we have people who have never taught and don't know what it means. Now, they've been in the classroom before because they were students, but that is a very different experience. And I think any teacher will tell you that.
Absolutely. I think representation is a massive issue. I think that you could make that case for any industry probably, but with education, it is its own beast, you know, and so often the problems we run into, I feel like, are a result of trying to make education a business, and it simply isn't one.
Well, and also looking at it like a parent. I mean, I'm a parent, and I try to draw that line. I'm very careful to draw that line of when I'm in my children's school, I am a parent. I am not a teacher. I hold my tongue whenever I, you know, I'm like, oh, there's this cool tool you guys could be using, but I know that's not my place. I have mentioned, but I've never pushed. But I think we have a lot of parents who are not educators, and I understand they want the best for their children, and I want the best for my children. But, and the example I'll give is I've never been an elementary school educator, and that's a completely different beast. I can't go and take a kid and teach them how to read when they don't know what a letter looks like at first. So kudos to every elementary school teacher out there. Because I don't know how they do it. I, by the time they get to me, they can usually at least read and write complete sentences. So I think that we've also got this, thing where we're being, measured and graded by tests that don't necessarily mean what it looks like they mean. Did that make sense?
Yeah, I think I can agree with that for sure. I think educators would agree with you.
Yeah, so you've got these tests that students take, and then the grade of the school is completely tied to how well they did in comparison to last year. But you've got different students altogether. It's not like they're comparing the same students to themselves. They're comparing last year's students to this year's students. And those groups are not going to be the same. And then the grade comes out for the school and it looks awful. In fact, the school my son goes to is not graded very well. And I've heard parents make comments about, well, they don't have a good grade. I want to pull them out and move them to this other school. And I have advocated and said, no, this, like, I haven't had a problem. Please tell me, you know, what's the problem? And when they say the report card or the grade that the school has, then I try to explain to them, that's not the whole story. And you really need to be looking at what type of education is your child learning? Is your child growing? And at the end of the day, that's what matters.
I'm like, I just want to scream, like, preach it. I love it. I have been fighting this struggle recently, and in our area, all of our schools dropped pretty much across the, and literally every high school in our area dropped in the most recent round of test scores. And we don't have a single A high school in our district anymore. And people are freaking out. Like, non-educators are like, well, what does that mean? That means we shouldn't even be going here. We should move out of this county. And, right. And it's like, no, like some of the best schools in our area are B and C schools. Those are the schools I would put my kid in.
Right.
That's the one I would have my son go to. Like, not the A schools, because that's not, a lot of times that's such a different education that I don't want that. You know, I even take it a step farther with my own son where I'm like, I almost don't know if I want him or feel like I need to pressure him to be a straight A student. I don't know that that's a priority in my book. And it was for me as a kid, but I don't think it is a priority for me for my own son.
Yeah.
And I think that's that step farther of like, yeah, the school grade doesn't matter. And I don't know that the class grade matters all that much.
Right. And I completely agree with you, because at least I see this in the high school a lot, where students have way overloaded themselves because they're so worried about AP classes. And I mean, we're a school of like 1400 kids, and I think we gave 1700 AP exams. So I had kids who were taking 6 AP exams. So that means they were taking 6 AP courses, which means they had 6 college level classes in high school. When does that leave time for going to sporting events and hanging out with friends and just being a high school student? And then they're so stressed and so worried about, am I going to get into this college? Am I going to have the highest GPA? And it's, this stress level is just too much. And we've had kids that have been sent to the hospital because they've been so stressed out. And it's ridiculous when a lot of those AP tests or a lot of those AP classes, even if they pass the test, doesn't actually translate into colleges. There are a number of colleges who don't even take those tests or take those AP classes in for college credit.
And on top, and it's typically the highest course colleges, the Ivy Leagues, the top 20 colleges that are not taking those credits because they want you to take all the credits with them. But that's, the kids are doing it to get into the top 20 colleges. It's the most ridiculous contradiction ever.
Right.
You know, and I'm dealing with this firsthand right now. This week is actually our first week back. So today was our third day of school back from summer break. And trying to get my student tech support kids in my classes where they belong has been a struggle because they're taking these higher level courses that are only offered 1 or 2 periods a day. So they can't shift everything around, but they're taking 5 and 6 of them, you know, mm-hmm. And I had one of my students who is admittedly probably in the top 10 in his grade level. And there are over 1,000 seniors in his grade level. So saying top 10 is a big deal, but he's like, well, I've got to take all these courses. I got to take these courses. And he's like, but I'm thinking I might want to drop 1 AP course to take this like minority achievement course we're offering, this like super, this leaders in minority achievement thing. And I'm like, and he's like, but I don't know, 'cause it's not a weighted credit and it's not blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, stop. Drop the AP course, go take AIM, like go where you want to be, because
that
first of all, you're going to make way more of an impact there. You're going to make way more of an impact in that that setting to actually be able to impact students and people and the community than you will in an AP macroeconomics course, which by the way is the worst sentence I've ever spoken, because that sounds awful. But on top of that, like, you're not building a resume. You're building the same resume as every other student in the country. So you're not setting yourself apart from anything.
Oh, and there was a podcast I listened to, and I wish I would have known we were going to get on this topic so I could have had it in front of me. But I listened, and they interviewed somebody who his entire job was to coach the students who weren't able to get into their top tier schools. And he had to show them that they had to have something different. And just taking every single AP class in the world is not different. It's what everybody's doing to try to get in. And then they don't get in. And then they go, wait a second, but I did all the things that I was supposed to do. And oh, yeah.
I'm fairly certain it is Jennifer Gonzalez's Cult of Pedagogy that you're referring to.
Right.
because I, the same student I'm talking about, I made him listen to that episode of the podcast the day I listened to it. I got to school and I go, you need to listen to what I just listened to. Like, you have to listen to this right now.
Yeah.
And he did. He listened to it and he goes, okay. And I, so when this came up a couple months later and he's like, I need to decide what I want to drop. I go, remember that podcast I made you listen to? Which one is going to give you a better shot at college? And he's right. Like, yeah, okay, you're kind of right. You know, so,
yeah.
But I want to go back to what your first point was. And I'm wondering, is the fact that we don't have representation in the system as a whole? So we are the grassroots as teachers, but the actual system is being controlled or managed by people that are not necessarily teachers. Is that directly correlated to this over acceleration, let's knock out college while you're in high school thing, do you think?
Well, I mean, that was the way to do it at one point, wasn't it? I mean, would you agree with that?
I think so.
At one point, that was the way to get into all the top colleges and everything, was to just study really, really hard and be the smartest. And how do you prove that? Through grades. But I don't think that's the way it is anymore. So I'm wondering if they're using that antiquated idea in order to make judgments on what they think we should be doing. I'm not sure if that makes sense.
I could see that. Like, because like you said, they were in school for 13 years, but it's because they were students.
Right.
And they're taking that student side expectation, that student side understanding, and applying it to how education should be run.
Right. Well, I mean, weren't colleges originally for like lawyers and doctors and I mean, it was just this very prestigious thing, and then.
But I think a lot of the other part of that, though, is this acceleration is this idea of acceleration of doing college level courses in high school, and then the extension of that, of course, is high school level courses in middle school and middle school courses in elementary school, and every district and state has their own version of that. But my students in my area can go into high school with 5 or 6 high school courses already knocked out by the time they're freshmen.
Right.
And you can be done with a year. You can basically be done with an AA degree in my area. You can get one class short of your AA when you graduate high school. And what happened to being a kid?
Yeah. You had a podcast episode that I just listened to. I don't know if it was your most recent one or if you've had one since then, but you had a student on, a freshman, in college, right? And he made that point of, mm-hmm. He even saw it that you in middle school or elementary school, you start tracking kids into the kids who are honors and the kids who are not. And the kids who are not honors, they just assume they're not honors and they just don't try. And they might even be interested in an AP course. And I think I'm pretty much quoting him at this point because he was dead on.
Yeah. And that was not the most recent episode, but it was the one like, I just released an episode on Friday, but so it was a fairly recent episode where that was Evan Jones talking about exactly that. Like you said, he said, you know, we're tracking these kids in one of two paths and that's not right. They're doing it too early and maybe we need to be finding another system that doesn't do that. So, well, I have a question for you I don't want to completely digress from your representation point because I agree with you that that's a major issue. So I'm going to bring us back just a little bit. How would our systems look different if we had better representation? What would change if the representation was representative?
I think there would be more thought as to how to actually get students to learn and not just to have them choose the right answers on a test, because those are two different things. I'm just gonna go ahead and put that out there. I had a teacher who once told me, he was like, you know, when you're taking these standardized tests, if you don't know the answer, when in doubt, Charlie out, because percentages show that it should be either B or C. As long as you choose one of them and stick with it throughout the test, you're gonna get more answers right. And the fact that you can do that and be okay with knowing less than you should, that doesn't equate learning at all. Like I can't imagine, I've had a few different jobs before I was an educator. And I don't remember taking an A, B, C, D or multiple choice test in any of them. Like that was not a job requirement skill. The only time I remember as an adult having to take a multiple choice test was the last time I voted. And when I was in the voting booth, it took every fiber of my being to not take a picture, because I know you're not supposed to take a picture of the voting card, but I wanted so badly to take a picture of the voting card and be like, look, standardized testing finally paid off. I know how to vote in a bubble form. that was pretty much it. And I think we're doing a disservice because we are becoming a group of consumers where we're expecting people to hand us the answers and then we just regurgitate it because that's what the tests tell us to do. Instead of creators, which is what you need to be able to survive. If you look at Google or Apple or Microsoft or any of these other companies, Amazon, Netflix, they're looking for creators. They're not looking for people who are going to give them the right answer. And those jobs are going away quick. I mean, go look at an Amazon plant. They're moving to robots, getting all of the, like, even packing things. Those jobs aren't there anymore. So we are doing a disservice to our students if we don't start giving them something other than, here's the answer, now you tell me what the answer is. And I think that if we had educators in charge, I think that there would be realistic ideas as to how to do that. Because I've worked in schools where they've tried to do it and you still have to hit all of those mandatory tests, those bubble forms. And there's that fear. That fear is always there of, well, we want to push the envelope and we want to do portfolios or we want to have them creating things and we want to have them exploring. But at the same time, we're so set, like our money is tied to whether or not they can choose the correct answer on a bubble form, that it's, you have to always come back to that. And we try to say we're not teaching to the test, but that's hard not to do when your school's money is tied to whether or not they do well.
Well, and let's be honest here. If you're not teaching the test, you're doing yourself and your students a disservice. Like, let's call it what it is. I mean, that is the reality. If you're not preparing your students for the test, if you're not making sure that the material on the test is covered in your class, you're hurting yourself, you're hurting your school, and you're hurting your kids. Like,
right.
And that's an issue of the system.
But at the same time, if you teach to the test, you're still hurting them because they're not learning the skills that they actually need when they walk out of school.
I agree with you, but I think you have to do both is what I mean.
Right.
If you're not actually I'm not saying that we should have to teach to the test, but the test is high stakes because there are high stakes.
Right. Right.
So it's an unfortunate reality of what we do. And hopefully, maybe that's that representation piece. Maybe if we were better represented in the legislature and in the decision-making arenas, then that discussion could be had at a place that someone might actually listen.
Right. And we'd probably also be able to measure kids on growth because it's not fair. I mean, and how fair is it to a student who walks in 2 years behind, who's made a year and a half, 2 years progress, still being told that they're not doing good enough because they didn't add on that third additional year to catch up with their classmates, even though they've made astounding growth. They're still being measured the same as if they walked in and they already knew it. So that's a problem too. I think we as educators would know to maybe look at growth as well as proficiency.
Absolutely. And our current Department of Education secretary or whatever she is doesn't even know the difference between those two terms. So clearly representation is something to be considered. What's funny to me, by the way, is you in our first recording of this, I have my notes. I pulled up my notes from last time. And you said that your biggest problem is that big shifts, we all agree they need to happen. And we have these great meetings saying that they need to happen, but then nothing actually changes. And as you talked, you literally like developed your thought into recognizing that that's because the discussions were happening with people didn't know what they were talking about.
Okay.
And you basically ended up in this exact same point, which I find interesting.
I knew I made this point at some point, and I figured this was the question I did it. I just don't remember how I got to this this right here, but I guess I had the brain.
You just had to develop your, you developed it as you spoke last time. So it was
good. I'm sorry that everybody missed that.
I know, it was so good. All right, well, I'm going to ask my second question here because I think we've talked about representation pretty thoroughly. I want to know, what is something that you're doing that you wish all teachers would do?
Well, I'm not a classroom teacher anymore, but I will frame it. So in my coaching practice, I've really worked hard to personalize my instruction to my teachers. And that's a little easier for me to do as a coach because there are some teachers that won't work with me. Like, they just refuse. They just go, no, I've been teaching long enough. I've been fine without you. I'll go on and continue without you. And, you know, sometimes you just got to let that go. But as a teacher, it's a little bit harder. So I've been working to try to solve that problem with my teachers. And I wish more teachers would focus on that. And by personalization, I mean gathering information about every one of your students and finding a way to reach them where they are, as opposed to, I'm just going to teach this unit. And if you don't get it, then I'm going to continue to move on, but try to fill in the holes as you go. If that all made sense right there.
No, absolutely. I think obviously personalization is a big push right now. Personalized education is a huge deal. But I agree with your point. You know, I think that's a struggle we all have, is that we, as in the coaching and administrative side, they didn't get it, but I've got to move on. And we're going, yeah, but they didn't get it. Like, you can't move on. That's not an option. However, the follow-up that every teacher will give you is, yeah, but I also have 75 more standards I have to cover before the test.
Right.
So how do you balance those two things for the students?
The
teachers, I guess.
Yeah. So I've been trying to work this out with, in my head so I can work more with my teachers on this. And it's a push that I want to make. And one thing that I found was a program. Oh, goodness. There is a group, a district in, I think it was Missouri. Again, I wish I could have studied up on, if I knew I was going this direction. There is a superintendent who started using the I do, you do, we do, but he uses it in a different way. I do would be like the modeling, which is what, if you've done the traditional I do, you do, we do, that's how you start, is the modeling. But he uses, he has the teachers use like videos of themselves modeling a skill. So let's take research papers, because that's what I'm most familiar with. So when I'm modeling in the I do, I might make a video as to how to do MLA format or APA format, or I might model how to correctly develop a thesis sentence or something, but I would put it on a video instead. And then as the student gets to you do, where they're actually doing that themselves, when they have a problem, instead of me having to take my physical being and as a teacher ignore the other 29 kids in my class and walk up to them and have that conversation again, I just can send them the video links and say, rewatch this. And if this doesn't help, I will pull other resources for you. So personalizing it in the fact that I know you're having this issue, let me give you what you need, but I don't necessarily have to physically be the one doing it. And then also utilizing students who have been successful in that to pair off. But yeah, I forget which podcast I heard about this program. And, so I, again, wish I could have studied up a little bit for you.
Yeah, but this is the Planning Period Podcast. The whole idea is we're just two teachers chatting. You wouldn't come to the break room to make your coffee with, by the way, here's the research that may be convenient in a conversation we might hypothetically have. So that's totally fine. That's what I love about my show, because I hate research. That's actually... It's See, really I'm mostly about me. I'm not going to lie.
See, yeah. I'm the opposite.
No, it's mostly like, about me.
If we were having this conversation in the break room, I would go back to my office, I would find it, and then I would email it to you. So,
well, if you feel the need, if you feel the need to research it and email it to me, I will include it in the show notes. How's that?
Okay.
There you go. So, well, I will also say for our live audience, those of you that are still with us here and are enjoying our ramblings, you can... join the back channel. We're at todaysmeet.com/planningperiod. You can ask questions of Ashley or myself as we're going along. That's todaysmeet.com/planningperiod. And if you have any questions, you can jump in there and ask them. So Ashley, you know, I love this individualized learning portion, this personalized learning thing. And I like what you talked about the kind of like pseudo flipped model of, well, here's a video that goes with it and letting the technology save the time, you know, letting the kids relearn it on their own pace and you continue on with those that maybe don't need the redirection. And I, in some ways that goes sort of against the typical model where I feel like we focus a lot of our time on the bottom 25 or the bottom 10% and the middle and the highs tend to get stuck or slowed down as a result of that. And I like your vision of it where you're doing the opposite kind of.
Well, and that's why I love technology, and education, because if there's a problem, you can usually go and try to solve it with some sort of technology, even if the technology is just paper pencil. And I know that a lot of what I think about is the fact that I have teachers in high school and my only experience again has been middle and high school. So I'm used to having 120 to 130 kids, that I'm responsible for. And as a teacher, those are the teachers that I work with. They've got 30 kids in every class times however many classes they have. That's a lot of people coming in and out of your room every single day, and they're hard to keep up with. So if we're using the right tools, then we can make that happen a heck of a lot easier. So videotaping yourself going over and modeling something and then just shooting that back to the student does two things. One, it multiplies you. And then two, it puts it back on the students, because at the end of the day, when they walk out of high school and go to college or they go into the real world, nobody's going to tell them the answer. It's going to be, go figure it out. And I think that's one of the things that when I went into college and when I went and started like moving to a different town and I realized, well, I have to find a vet for my dog. How do I find that? I have to go research for it and figure out which vet would work. So I'm not like driving down and find some shady back alley veterinarian to, you know, take care of my tiny little 4-pound dog that I love dearly. And so I think that by doing it that way, where you're personalizing it and then you're putting the work back on the students, then you're helping to teach them more than just the standards that you're trying to teach.
Yeah, absolutely. I like it. I'm good with that. I like it. All right. Well, with the most subtle of transitions, why didn't know my third question? Who is the best teacher you've ever had?
See, that's tricky, because when I was in high school, the best teacher I had was my high school English teacher. Her name was Brenda Brown, and I absolutely loved her. And the reason why was because she knew me so well, and part of that is because I knew her since I was little. Like, I was in elementary school. She was teaching high school, but I knew her from elementary school because, one, she had a reputation throughout the entire town, which by saying it that way makes it sound like it's huge, but it's not. There's literally two stoplights. And so we were, in fact, when I started school there, we were a K through 12 school and we all were housed in one building. And I remember.
So to say that everybody in the town knew her is really everybody just happens to know everybody by default.
Yes. Everybody who went to school during that time period and was in high school at any time had her for English at some point. You couldn't get around it. You she taught everybody. So she was a great teacher, and mainly because she knew me and she took the time to really sit down and talk to me and really understand me and myself. And there were some times in high school that I really, really needed that. And she was a fantastic teacher. But now as an educator, she used a lot of old-fashioned lecturing and things like that. So, which kind of is weird because she's the reason why I became a teacher. But I also remember having that kind of crisis at one point where I was like, but she's awesome, but all this research and all the things that I'm learning now about education, you know, it didn't jive at one point. And I ended up finding a way to kind of put all that together. And, but yeah, that was, it's weird because she really was the reason why I became an English teacher.
You know, I'm so glad, first of all, in case you're curious, that's the same teacher you said last time I asked you that question.
I think I remember that one.
So she is definitely your favorite teacher. I will agree with you and yourself both. and what I'm really happy about is you got back to the same point that I found so fascinating last time. And the way you kind of put it before was that she was the teacher you wanted to be until you became a teacher.
Right.
And I thought that was just such a fascinating thought process. And I'm curious how you deal with now that sort of gap between the vision of what you thought education was and sort of the truth of what you find it to be.
So when I was a student, I worked really hard to do the very best I possibly could. And I was okay with the fact that I had to sit down and write a research paper. Or I mean, I could sit in a seat and I could read a book. And I was just that type of person. School was something that I enjoyed, and school was something that I could do and I was good at it. So then when I became a teacher, my assumption was that every student could do that. And then I learned, no, not everybody is like me, and not everybody can sit and read a book for 2 or 3 hours, or can sit and do a worksheet, or can read something and understand what it means immediately and remember it for years to come. That's just the way I was. And I just thought everybody else was that way. And those students around me when I was a student who weren't doing so well, my idea of them was that they just weren't trying, or they didn't care, or they were lazy. And then when I became a teacher, I realized that's not the case, and that I needed to do better as a teacher for them, to work with them in a way that they would understand, or that would help them, because they didn't learn the same way.
Yeah, you know, I'm sort of piecing things together here, and it's interesting because we started out by talking about representation, and one of the points that was made was that these representatives, these legislators, are making decisions based on what education was from a student perspective. And then you talked about personalized PD and reaching every student where they are, but then you ended with this phenomenal teacher who had an amazing impact on your life, and then the recognition that that's not actually how education works. And we're back to that same, it's like the legislators are you as a high schooler going, well, this is the best teacher I've had, so every teacher should be like them.
Right. Right.
And that's, it's interesting that's what to me that those threads kind of work their way through.
Yeah. That's really what I thought when I walked into education was I am going to teach them. And if they want to be lazy or whatever, then I'm going to be hard on them and I'm going to, but then I realized that wasn't working. So yeah, you're right. And that's why I think that the people who are representing us and the people who are making the rules about what teachers and administrators have to do should have to be a teacher at some point. And they should have to do it for more than 1 or 2 years because let's face it, the first year of teaching is you trying to keep your head above water. And then the second year is you making your head is there above water, but you're still getting splashed with waves. So, those first couple of years, they're really hard.
So tell me, I mean, even in perfect world, every governor, senator, whatever representative can't possibly have been a teacher before, or else number one, we wouldn't have any teachers left. And number two, no one else would be represented. You know, again, I think every profession can say that unless you've walked in our shoes, you don't know the reality of our job. But what is a real way? What can we do right now to sort of address this issue? What do we need to be doing to address these issues? And is there anything we can do?
So I think one thing that we should be doing is, and we see this as connected educators. So, and for anybody who isn't a connected educator, or you're not sure what that is, it's just somebody who is willing to connect with others throughout the country using different digital tools like Twitter or Voxer or Facebook. And I think that we need to start being really, really loud. And I think we need to be willing to write our senators and write our representatives and talk to them and have them actually listen to us, which can be hard because we're very, very busy. So I think every teacher should be blogging. They should be writing what is going on in their classes and putting it up there for everybody to see so that the struggle can be seen. We have to be transparent, first of all. And then I think we should be just advocating and getting our message out there. You know, this is why this isn't going to work. And it has to be that those points have to be made before laws are made. So I'll give you an example. In the state of North Carolina, we're looking at, they have lowered the class size requirements for students in elementary grades K through 3, I believe, or it's K through 2. So they've said you have to have less students in each class, in each classroom. Well, that sounds like a great idea because we always complain about class size, but then the logistics of it actually happening, I know at least for my district, which is a very small district in Chapel Hill, we have to open at least one more elementary school. But you're talking about, like 10, 15 schools that are going to have to be opened in, Wake County, which is Raleigh, North Carolina, and then in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. I mean, you're talking tons of buildings, and then how do you fund that? So you're making laws, but then you're not funding it. So if you make the classes smaller, you got to have more teachers. Where does that money come from if you're not saying, well, here's the money that goes with it? So I really think we have to be advocating for ourselves. We have to be really loud, but at the same time, we have to be respectful because that's something that I think is really important because there's a lot of people in the world right now who are very loud with their message, but they're not respectful to others. And I think that hurts their message. So I think that's kind of the way we need to go at it. And then we also need to listen and they need to respect the opinions of the people that they are making these rules for.
Okay, but I'm a little bit of devil's advocate here. I think the reason teachers don't talk now, the reason they don't share, they don't blog, they don't put that information out there, one of the main reasons they're not connected educators, and you and I kind of touched on this even before we went live, is that there is a moral standard of a teacher that I don't believe most of us can actually live up to. And part of that is, one of the main reasons for that is because we shouldn't be influencing children of some other parent in our own life and our own beliefs and whatever else. But, you know, I have seen lots of cases where teachers are gagged, not literally, but I mean figuratively gagged or told to stop talking. I have been one of those people that has been told to stop talking about things that I'm putting online. And I've seen teachers get in trouble for things they put on their personal Facebook, let alone what they're publicly publishing. So I think there's an understandable fear from some teachers that they don't want to be a connected educator because it can get them in trouble. So how do we get them over that hump to be willing to share and want to share and feel safe sharing what they're doing when they don't feel like they can share what's happening in their regular lives as it is?
I think there's strength in numbers. I think the more of us that come out and do these things and advocate, the better. So I completely understand your point, and I've seen it before too. And I will fully 100% admit that there are things that I do not blog about, and there are things that I have very strong opinions on that I will not say. I won't post it on Facebook. I won't post it on Twitter because I don't want to be put in that situation. But there are ways to advocate. I don't know how to say this. just start simple, and you do not have to rock the boat. Like at least starting out, just be transparent, you know, just being able to say, I had a hard day because I have 30 children in a class, 5 different class periods. There's a lot of them and only so many of me. That's powerful in itself. And that just being able to have that connection with just another educator is powerful. And then once you start to have those connections and you realize that, oh, wait, we all kind of think this way, or we all see this same problem, I think there's a little bit of safety in numbers. So when you're the one person, you can get plucked out. But when everybody's kind of banded together and says, you know, this isn't right, then it's a little harder to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I like that. And, you know, the other thing I'll point out is, as a professional practice, reflecting on what you're doing is a very powerful tool. So if you start with just blogging what you did and how it went and why you did it and where it went wrong or where it went well, that's a great place to start. I agree with you. You don't have to rock the boat from your first push. And maybe that's the way to think about it, is get comfortable with writing and blogging and sharing. And then when you're comfortable and an issue comes up, maybe that's worth mentioning. And that's where you take that next step. So I like that. I like that. Baby steps.
Yeah. And this is probably the most honest I've ever been. Like, I usually don't get into politics. I don't tweet about politics. I don't, but you know, but I'm starting to get more comfortable with it because I've been doing this for about a year now. But again, there's a lot of things I still will not touch, and I don't want to. So you don't have to.
Oh, I fully get that. My guest tonight was Ashley McBride, and you can find her at A+EdTech and check out her podcast, the A+EdTech Podcast. She is awesome. She's the best. So make sure you check in with her.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all for joining us. Sorry for the kind of abrupt ending on that one. We talked about some things live that didn't fit in the recorded version, and also had another guest pop in whose audio didn't get recorded, so it made for kind of a choppy ending. Still, thanks again to Ashley for being a guest on my show and just being great. It was awesome. If you'd like to connect with Ashley, find her on Twitter. She's at A+EdTech, and that's all spelled out. Also, be sure to check out her podcast, the A+EdTech Podcast. Again, I will be a guest on her next episode of the podcast, which will release next week. Her and I sat down and talked about my student tech support class that I run, that you've maybe heard me mention on the show, and it turned into a pretty interesting conversation.
As always, if you liked what you heard, do me a favor and give me a review on iTunes. It is the best way you can help out the show. Head over to tinyurl.com/planningperiodreview, and you're right where you want to be to make that review. You can also connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Schreffler. I always love to hear from you. That's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Until next week, remember that if you have the most kids on the team, you have to be the coach. Music for this podcast is provided by Kevin MacLeod and is the song Vicious, licensed under Creative Commons. This show is also a proud member of the Voice Ed Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. Your voice belongs here.